I want to welcome everybody to our Woodbridge Monday Night Speaker Series. And our speaker for this evening is Teresa from Hillsborough, who came to share her strength, hope, and experience. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me. Christina said, I'm Teresa from Hillsborough. My home meeting is at the Somerville Assisted Living, and then I also attend the Rocky Hill meeting in Rocky Hill, New Jersey. And when I was asked to speak tonight, I was kind of nervous just to really talk about my time in OA. And I guess I was worried that I'd have anything really insightful to say. But I also know that, you know, I speak the truth, and what everybody does with it, that's, you know, that's up to God, you know. I know at other speaker meetings, we were asked to share our experience and our strength and our hope. And the way that I can probably put it more simply is I put down that I came and I'm in recovery. So that's my experience, my strength, and my hope. So the experiences, they're all mine, but the strength and the hope, they come from many sources. And for me particularly, it was my lovely sponsor, my higher power, and also all of the people that I've met in program, going to marathons, just different meetings. I am the sum of all my experiences, good and bad, and whatever I share with you tonight is not original. It's just things that have been shown to me. And there's a saying in program about you can't keep what you don't give away. And I've really been fortunate to have learned so much through these rooms and have much more to learn. And I feel that it's my responsibility to pass it on. It's also my privilege. So you're going to hear tonight, you're going to hear secondhand news, but it's all good. Okay, so my experience, where I was, I ate. I will say that I might not seem to be like a typical OA member, and that's what kept me out of the rooms for a long time, because I thought I didn't belong here. I had a normal childhood, so you grow up and you find out that everybody's dysfunctional, and you know, we're all the same after all. But I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and my husband, when I met him and came out to visit my family, he likened the area to Cleaverville. He thought it was like Leave It to Beaver, and that we lived in Cleaverville and everything was so nice and uniform. And I thought it was a compliment, you know, because I thought I grew up in a really nice time and everything. But looking back, the things that made it so nice and comforting are actually the things that handicapped me later in life. And a lot of that had to do with control, perfectionism, and things like that. And I contend that God used, my higher powers, God used food as a way to get my attention about much larger issues, because I definitely needed something tangible to say I had a problem with. You know, I say I had a normal childhood, but eventually you grow up and you get over it. You know, like my daughter will say to me, get over yourself, Mom. Like, don't flatter yourself. You know, everybody's got problems, you know. But I wasn't able to move on without a lot of help along the way. And one of the promises in OA is to not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And as I said before, I'm the sum of my experiences. So I'm glad I grew up the way that I did, and for every experience along the way, because without it, I would not be who I am today, and that's someone who is, you know, learning more and more about myself every day. And thanks to this program, it's not a scary thing to come to the self-discovery. So, as I said, I grew up in Cleaverville, and my family was very religious. But then again, all the families around us were religious. So, I think one family across the street didn't practice our faith, but they were still religious, you know. So I say that by way of saying everything was just uniform. You know, I went to school with the same kind of kids as I did to church. There was really no diversity of thought of almost anything. Conformity was expected. Obedience was required. Things were either black or white, and they were good or bad. So there's a comfort in that. that, as you, as I said, as you grow up, it handicaps you, because what was familiar as a child doesn't give you the skills to deal with grays, and things are somewhat good, a little bit of good and the bad, a little bit of bad and the good. Being that there was no room for the middle ground, it also prevented me from being able to express like emotions or doubts that I may have had about things not being black or white. And I almost felt that because of that, I held myself to a higher standard. I felt my parents did that too. I was emulating them in that regard, that you know, we're above the fray. And out of this, like I say this background to just emphasize that this made me a very disciplined person and a perfectionist. And I think that was my way of always trying to strive to be the best that I could be. Like, it was expected of me. I was a normal weight in childhood. I was athletic. I was pretty active. I remember food being functional. You know, I don't remember having any other purpose than you have breakfast, you have lunch, and you have your dinner. And back in the 60s and 70s, you know, snacking was not the occasion that it is today. It's basically you have to, you know, make an effort to leave food. You know, now food is everywhere all the time, anytime you can get your hands on it. Although, you know, if you want something specific to eat, that might be really hard when you're in program and you need to have this, you know, particular thing. Then you notice that maybe you don't have as many choices as you thought you did, you know. But we, you know, breakfast in the morning, lunch was at school, my mom packed our lunches, and dinner time was whatever my mom fixed and was on the table. It just, food didn't have an emotional component to me. So what happened was, and I will say this, that, you know, I guess I was grateful for not having all that opportunity to eat, but it didn't teach me how to make choices when food became available. So, and I also do remember my mom not really eating the food that she would serve us, and I think she would always have a salad and things like that. So, yeah, but that was her choice, but I always felt like maybe, I don't know why she did that. And she was always, you know, very attractive and is very attractive for her age. And I don't know, part of me, I think, I'm just thinking of this as I say it, is feeling like I wouldn't really measure up. I didn't associate it with food at the time, but I just thought my mom was kind of special and, you know, wow, it must be nice to be her. So so that was my little, you know, time as a, you know, 10, 12-year-old. Then I started babysitting, and that was like letting me out of the zoo, because then there came the freedom. You're in someone else's house. This is how actually I decided to I think about, you know, babysitting and then college. Number one, you have this freedom that you never had before. You have unlimited food. You have almost no accountability in terms of if you can get your hands on it and, you know, wind up not gaining a lot of weight with it. But like I remember, oh, and also it's free. You know, can't pass up free food. Babysitting, and it just got to be a focus. Like as soon as they left, I'd have to go see what they had. Because they'd say, oh, help yourself to anything. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I hope that I can, you know, pace myself so I don't clean them out. And it was like a really weird feeling to think like that got to be a focus of babysitting. I mean, I took care of the kids, trust me, but I don't know what I was looking for. And the only thing I can think of is that I was trying to fill myself up for something. Not maybe what I couldn't find at home in terms of love, attention, all that kind of stuff, as my daughter would say, get over it. But I just looked at that as like, oh my gosh, I've got to have everything I can get my hands on. And the same thing happened in college. There was that freedom. And this is where the food problems and the disorders, you know, kind of came to a head. I'll step back. My senior year in high school, went to an all, you know, Catholic high school, so you wore uniforms and nobody really stuck out as more, you know, beautiful or anything like that. I mean, I felt pretty secure in high school, but I can remember sitting in the class in senior year and saying to somebody next to me, I really wish food was like alcohol. Now, I don't think I had any idea of Alcoholics Anonymous in terms of like being a place that you could be helped for an addiction. My uncle is a recovering alcoholic, but that's kind of like, that happened on my side of the family. Like, I thought that was like, it's just a, you know, oh well. But I can remember making that connection, and I thought of that as I came into OA, like, wow, even back then I could see that food had a power over me that was not rational, and that there, it was more than a physical addiction, that it was a mental compulsion for me. So I went off to college and away from home, followed my cousin to a school. We didn't do the college things like they do now, where you get the big Barron's book and you go through 700 colleges and you whittle down your choices. It was, you just kind of go where someone else went, and it was a pretty good school. So I went down to Virginia. I was from Maryland, went to Virginia. And that was just amazing. Again, freedom. I was away from my parents, away from their control, away from the rigidity of my teen years, which I really, really despised. But problem was, I didn't know what to do with that freedom. So I just had a wonderful time eating at all the different food courts at the college. And somehow, I don't know how I made the connection. I may have seen somebody or whatever, but I decided that I would learn how to get rid of it. I would binge and purge, because God forbid I should actually gain weight. It's like the it's like two sides of the